Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 53. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. I hope you had a great holiday, a great Thanksgiving Thursday. I hope you ate a lot of turkey, ham, whatever you needed to do share time with your family. Hopefully, if you're like me, hopefully you didn't have to spend much of any with family. But I'll save those stories for another day. I had a great day, and obviously David Todd is not with me. He's flying back from New York City today. Sitting in for him today is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Thanksgiving to you once again. You took the same course of action as I did yesterday, didn't you?
Yeah, I like a dinner without a lot of people that lets me watch football right afterwards. So that, and hopefully if you're listening, you survive the Black Friday shopping. I've heard and seen some of the crazy videos of the humans out there just acting like humans. So hopefully you survive the madness.
Can you imagine me out there in that mess?
I don't even want to think about how you would react to that. I think you'd probably kill somebody at one point.
Yeah, pretty much. I probably have to be doing this episode from a jail cell more than
this
likely.
This would be your one phone call. You'd be like, "Hey, officer, let me just Skype in real quick."
Yeah, and not just 5 minutes. I need 55 minutes. 55 minutes here for sure. Speaking of which, those games yesterday, man, what? It was some duds, right?
Yeah, it was. They were turkeys in one sense of it. Yeah, the Eagles just, at one point the question was, is Chip Kelly gonna, make it to next year? Is he gonna make it through the rest of the year now? I don't know. He might get fired.
Yeah. I can't wait to, maybe David's avoiding this episode right now so I can take his temperature again, as far as his thoughts on Chip Kelly. Where do you come in on this now? I don't think we really, you and I have talked much about Chip Kelly, and don't worry, listeners, this won't be an Eagles Depot episode, but you think he's done after this year?
I mean, I've always appreciated his mind. I think he's a really smart guy, even though the results this year haven't been very good. But the bottom line, and I said, because I have an Eagles friend of mine, and we'd always talk about it, whenever he decided to take control of the roster in the offseason and basically be the guy that would, create this roster and run this team, I said it would either go really, really well or really, really poorly, and he's going to be accountable for whatever outcome happens, and obviously we're on the really, really poorly end of things. So no, I don't think he makes it. I don't think he comes back this year, next year.
Yeah, well, whether it's on his own decision or the Eagles, I'm with you. And the question really now is, we'll see how this Eagles team does over the course of the final five games, which, by the way, isn't a cupcake schedule on top of it. who knows? He might cut and run by about Christmas time. We'll see. Carolina and Dallas, boy, that. It's hard to argue that. I mean, Carolina is a legitimate Super Bowl contender, right?
Absolutely, and they get back Charles Johnson at defensive end, which is good for their pass rush. They got a really good defensive line. Luke Kuechly is just an animal down the middle. I mean, interception on back-to-back plays. I look back as far as 2000, I couldn't find an instance of a linebacker with interceptions on back-to-back plays. They got Josh Norman, who just shut down Dez Bryant. And then offensively, they got Cam Newton, Jonathan Stewart. They get Andrew Norwell back on the offensive line. They don't have a number one established receiver, but they have Greg Olsen, who does a good impersonation of one.
Do you remember watching tape any on Josh Norman? I was trying to think back yesterday during that game, if I did, out of Coastal Carolina. What was it, something like 2012? Do you remember watching any tape on him at all?
I saw your tweet. No, I didn't watch him. I think that was still, more in my scouting infancy a couple of years ago, so I didn't catch as many players. So, no, I didn't have any sort of pre-draft evaluation on him.
Boy, if only the Steelers could come up with a cornerback in the fifth round.
That'd be nice.
I like that. They certainly have failed lately in that round when it comes to corners, and it does. We'll have to see what happens with Cortez Allen.
And hey, William Gay, fifth round guy, shutting down guys down.
That's true.
So their version of it.
Yeah, how many years ago was that?
Longer than you'd like for another corner to come in, but I'm just trying to be a little positive.
Absolutely. Well, they in Dallas, boy, you would have to think they're done right now, losing Tony Romo again. I mean, I know that that NFC East division is a bunch of junk right now, but it's just hard to see Dallas going to be able to get over that hump without him. And Chicago surprised Green Bay. Are you worried at all about Green Bay at this point of the year? Do you think? You know, well, obviously, I think we both agreed we still think they're going to be in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, probably, but I mean, it's certainly it's hard to feel confident. I am happy to see the running game get established. Eddie Lacy having a strong last 2 weeks, but I mean, Rodgers just does not have any weapon to go to. You know, Cobb gets covered up pretty well. Then you're looking at Devontae Adams, who had a terrible game yesterday, and a lot of other guys that don't really excite you. That offensive line continues to suffer some injuries. I don't know, Dave. I mean, they might not make it.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota's right there in that division, and silently, Chicago's really, mm-hmm. They're not out of it either, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. They're playing good football as well, too. How about we talk a little bit about the Steelers now?
That'd be nice.
And we'll start with the injury report from yesterday. I guess you could kind of say a few negatives there when it comes to Thursday's injury report with the Steelers. We'll see what the Friday one says here in a few hours. Ryan Shazier back on the injury report. He did not show up on the Wednesday injury report, but he did on the Thursday. Failed to practice because of a knee. So we'll have to see. You know, if he's able to practice Friday. If he's not, you would think that he's not going to play against the Seahawks on Sunday. So we'll watch that closely for sure. For you Brandon Boykin fans out there, it's certainly not looking good for him. Looks like going in the opposite direction, because he was limited on Wednesday by an ankle, and he sat out Thursday because of that same ankle as well, too. So, boy, I mean, you could definitely, there's a chance, and we'll see what happens Friday, obviously. There's a chance Brandon Boykin could be inactive Sunday against the Seahawks. Really some negative news, I think, when you talk about Matt Spaeth as well, too. Well, he was limited on Thursday with that knee, and if you go back to what Mike Tomlin said Tuesday during his press conference, he didn't sound overly convinced or didn't give the appearance that Matt Spaeth would be dressed Sunday against the Seahawks. And Spaeth, obviously, had missed the two games prior to the bye week with that same knee. You and I have speculated that, who knows, maybe he had to have a little cleanup done in there as well, too. We still don't know for sure whether or not that happened. So that's another guy that could be without a helmet on Sunday. As far as the rest, to clean up the rest of the injury report, James Harrison, knee, Shamarco Thomas, knee, and linebacker Terrence Garvin, knee, all practice fully again. And you wrote about this, huge boost to special teams, right?
Absolutely, because, we'll talk a bit about Seattle here shortly, Dave. Tyler Lockett, the numbers might not be most eye-popping when you look at the averages, but Tyler Lockett's one of the most explosive return men already for a rookie. I was a big fan of him out of Kansas State. He was a two-time Big 12 Special Team Player of the Year, two-time honorable mention. I mean, the guy's a big threat. The Steelers coverage units have been fantastic this year, but it'll be one of their biggest tests of the year this Sunday, so it'll be great to have Shark back, and especially Terrence Garvin, who, according to Danny Smith, and I believe it too, is basically their top special teamer.
Do you think early shot at this thing? You think Spaeth is down Sunday?
I think Spaeth is down. I think Shazier plays, but those are just guesses.
And who else did we say we were worried about? You think Boykin's up or down?
I think Boykin's probably down. And real quick on Shazier, it might just be managing reps for the rest of the year, just because they know he's dealing with something small. Remember, he didn't practice a couple times the last game before Cleveland. He was out like, Wednesday, Thursday, practice Friday. So they could be just managing his reps. They wanted to practice on Wednesday because that was your installation day. Sit him down on Thursday. Maybe he comes back today and gets some limited work in. So maybe they're just trying to take care of his body the best way they can.
And obviously we'll know a little bit more come a few hours from now when the Friday injury report comes out here. Flipping over to the Seahawks real quick and their injury report, not practicing on Thursday, were linebacker Bruce Irvin and wide receiver Paul Richardson, not looking good for both those guys. Of course, Marshawn Lynch has already been ruled out for that game. He, of course, had hernia surgery on Monday. The rest of their injury report you know, really looks pretty clean. It looks like Doug Baldwin and his ankle are going to be okay. Two of their offensive linemen, Gary Gilliam and J.R. Sweezy, look like they're going to probably end the week listed as probable. Same goes for Thomas Rawls and his knee, the running back there, and center Patrick Lewis probably going to end the week listed as probable again. So really the only names other than Marshawn Lynch being ruled out that, you know, we as Steeler fans will be watching will be Bruce Irvin and Paul Richardson, who Paul Richardson, I mean, not a big name, but a guy that can probably stretch the field for you a little bit. Kind of need to clean up some other information that we left off that David and I talked about on Wednesday, and that, of course, is Mike Adams. And Alex, as much as I like to study the CBA, and that's quite a bit, there's just so much in it to absorb and to know exactly how things work until things at real, you know, real instances happen during the season, and then you get explanation on them. And such is the case with Mike Adams, which I was able to learn something new this week too. And in short, you know, Mike Adams, you know, ended his 2015 season has now come to an end because he was never allowed to return to practice after starting the season on the reserve PUP list. Because that happened in the final year of his current contract, he is no longer scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the offseason. And the terminology involved with that is having your contract tolled. And basically that means, you know, that year didn't count. You know, he'll get, I believe, you know, he still got paid, obviously. Mm-hmm. He still counted against the salary cap. I think he still gets credit for an accrued season, but just not one towards free agency. And if anybody wants to look and read up on this, I did the post on this the other day, and it references Article 20 in the CBA, Section 2. And in short, what that means is, Mike Adams will at least be, assuming he's healthy, he will be back in training camp in 2016 with the Steelers for the same amount of money that he was scheduled to earn in 2015, which was a little over $873,000. So in essence, you know, once again, assuming he's healthy, he's going to be allowed, you would think, to compete for a swing tackle spot over the course of the summer. So you'll be seeing him at training camp, Alex.
Just when you thought Mike Adams would go away, he comes right back at you. Quick question, Dave, and I assume the answer is yes to this, but he still would count the same against the cap next year, right?
Yeah, to my understanding, that's what it would be. Okay. I asked Joel Corey this, and he says, well, he got paid in 2015. He counts in 2015 against the cap. Mm-hmm. Same as if he was on the injured reserve, okay. Type situation there. And I would assume that there's no cap credit involved there, but you know, assuming when it comes to the CBA it is dangerous. I'll try to get further explanation from Joel Corey on that as well too. But look, you know, we talk about the team is up in the air about the future status of Kelvin Beachum. We don't know what's going to happen with him and his contract during the offseason, being as how he's scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent. Assuming Beachum, you know, was it or isn't going to return in 2016, you know, that would have left the Steelers with only Marcus Gilbert and Alejandro Villanueva as legitimate tackles, you know, under contract for 2016. Now, Micah Hatchie is, you know, he's on injured reserve and he is under contract for 2016. But based on what we saw on his tape during the preseason, neither one of us expect him to compete for a roster spot during training camp if he makes it that far, right?
Yeah, you have, well, I think Kelvin Palmer, Mitchell Van Dyke on there too, but those are just, you know, maybe some bodies that'll come back. I mean, if they bring Adams back, you know, it's not going to upset me, obviously, but if it's me, I just cut him in the off season. I'd rather just wash your hands of him, move on. If you want to go sign a veteran, you know, out there on the market, maybe a guy that can, you know, be a better swing tackle, because, you know, Adams at left tackle is still never really an appealing option. But, you know, if they bring him back, they bring him back. His chances are, I still think, close to zero to make this team. He's just trying to stay in the league right now, if from my perspective. And you know, whenever I saw the news, you know, that he wasn't going to get activated this year and it was basically official, I thought it was interesting because I tweeted this out. I thought at one point, even last year, early last year, there, you know, Marcus Gilbert and Mike Adams were almost in a similar spot. Now, Gilbert had gotten paid, but he was struggling. People were wondering, you know, if he really was worth that money. But those were a couple of guys that had all of the tools that we kind of talk about, you know, scattered around in the toolbox, and you know, had a lot of technical issues. Gilbert, you know, he played with his hands too low, you know, waist bender, some of the things you saw with Adams. But, you know, you saw two guys go in completely two different directions. Gilbert got in the best shape of his life. You saw he got a lot better with coaching. He cleaned up his technique, and now he's, I think, a top five right tackle in this league. Mike Adams, you know, had some of the health issues, but never really got better, didn't really get in a whole lot better shape. And now, you know, who knows what his NFL future, if any, is. So I thought it was really interesting where they were kind of in a similar spot and they took two completely different paths.
Yeah, but I don't think you cut him just to cut him, assuming he's healthy, right? I mean, you were kind of insinuating that's the way you would go. In my opinion, everybody knows that listens to this show or reads Steelers Depot. I'm not a big Mike Adams fan, but with that said, I think you know if he passes a physical, you have to have him there in camp.
Well, I mean, you could take the Lance Moore route and cut him in the off season. I mean, you know, it's not unheard of. I know the depth is thin, but if you sit there with the plan of we're going to go sign a free agent tackle, whoever it might be, you can go ahead and release Mike Adams if you feel like you're really confident in finding somebody. I'm just saying, if Mike Adams comes to camp, again, I'm not upset if he does, but what are realistically his chances of making this team?
I mean, it depends, but you can still draft a tackle, and you can still sign another reserve tackle. And let's face it, I mean, this team isn't going to go out and pay big money for a free agent left or right tackle.
Right.
I mean, obviously they're not going to do that. I mean, and nothing prevents you from still doing that. But I mean, you've got him under contract for a cheap. You know, you're under $1 million. I mean, a cheap amount, so relatively speaking. And what if he is? You know, what if another off season when Mike Munchak does wind up, you know, helping him, and he can at least become a serviceable swing tackle. So you know, that's my view on it. You at least you got him under contract. You at least bring him to training camp.
No, I mean, I understand, but I feel like that mentality of just one more year with Mike Adams is kind of how we've gotten into this spot in the first place. I mean, it's like an old, beat-up, like, junker car. It's like your first car that was a piece of junk, but you just kept putting money into because you're like, if I just get this fixed, you know, we'll be good. I won't have to worry about it. And I just feel like that's the same for Mike Adams, where you just think, if we just do one more thing, it'll be okay, it'll work out. I mean, I get it. Like I said, I'm not upset about it, but I've just been so frustrated and so fed up with Mike Adams, and I sit there and I feel like he has next to no chance to really ever be a contributor to this team. I'd rather just wash my hands clean of him and just move on from the Mike Adams era. But I understand your point. Just a depth, you know, a depth move, another body, maybe you'll get something out of it. There's no risk in it. I understand that.
Fair enough. You'll probably pick up a few fans on this podcast as well, too, because I know there's several that probably feel the same way as you. Just go ahead and cut bait and get rid of them. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I mean, if he was going to be an unrestricted free agent, I don't think you trip over yourself trying to get him re-signed, even though you still lack depth there. And I still would have expect the Steelers. Depending on what happens with Kelvin Beachum, obviously, and we'll see how Alejandro Villanueva plays, you know, in these final six games as well, too, that they very well could take a tackle in the first, I don't know, four rounds, you know.
I think that's likely,
In fact, I think both of us would probably be surprised if at some point during the draft they didn't draft a tackle and a guard, too, right?
Yeah, I think you could go offensive line heavy this year.
All right, let's see here. Where do we need to go to next? Let's go ahead and talk about Lawrence Timmons real quick. Once again, Timmons over the course of the last couple of days made his wishes known that he wants to end his career in Pittsburgh. And being as he has, you know, such a high cap charge in 2016, which is scheduled to be the final year of his current contract, I think everybody, you know, listening is pretty much in agreement that he cannot play at what he's currently scheduled to make. However, you know, he is. I mean, let's start there. How is Timmons playing right now compared to you know, last season where he made the Pro Bowl.
Well, I think I talked about this last time, Dave. You know, there's been some issues in his game. There's been some criticism, and some of it's been fair. Again, I think there's two things to remember, though. One, you know, like I said last time, you know, at the end of training camp, he had that turf toe injury, which, you know, you can't understate. That's a pretty big injury. You know, so people say he's playing better now. I think he's just getting healthier now, and his toe is feeling better. And I think with his bye week, you know, to rest, he'll look even better. So I think health was a factor early in the year. I think the other factor is he plays 100% of the snaps. He has not missed a single snap this year. He's the only player on defense in the NFL to say that. So when you play that high volume of snaps, you're naturally going to have some negative plays. So I think you can sit there and cherry pick a couple negative plays, but when you're playing every single snap, I mean, that's just the nature of the, nature of the beast. So, I mean, it's a little unfair, you know, because if you play whatever the number of snaps is, it's over 600 something. I mean, that's just going to happen. So I think Timmons has done well. I think he's getting better. I think he's getting healthier. He's still the leader of this defense, the knowledgeable, savvy veteran. I think he gets off of blocks well. I think he's still using his hands well and staying clean. Yeah, his coverage could be a little bit better. He might have lost a step, but he's still a smart guy who understands, you know, route combinations and getting to a spot and things like that. So I've been overall happy with Timmons. I would, you know, we're probably going to see the extension there to lower that cap hit in typical Steelers fashion. But I don't have a lot of complaints about Lawrence Timmons.
He's scheduled to earn $8.75 million in 2016 with a cap charge of over $15.1 million. Now, obviously, a lot of that cap charge involves previous restructures, and also, you know, you're only going to be able to lower it so much. And my theory on what's going to happen, and you should be able to find this on SteelersDepot.com later in the day, is you give him, if he's willing to, and, you know, no reason to think that he won't right now, you know, at his age and the way he's playing, is to give him an extension similar to the one that Troy Polamalu and Heath Miller got a couple years ago. Both those players basically, well, they did. They added on two more years onto their contracts, a good portion of the base salaries that they were scheduled to earn in that first year were turned into signing bonuses. No new guaranteed money was added on in addition to that, i.e. a signing bonus. And then, you know, their the base salaries of their final 2 years were reasonable, yet not guaranteed. Now, would Timmons be willing to do something, you know, similar to that to finish his career in Pittsburgh? We'll see. You know, basically, what I think might happen is that you pay Timmons $7.25 million of the $8.75 million that he's scheduled to earn in 2016 as a signing bonus. And then you give him, let's say you give him base salaries in 2017 and 2018 of $7 million and $9 million respectively, he's still going to average over the course of those 3 years over $8 million a season, which I think is fair. By using those numbers that I just gave you, you're able to lower his 2016 cap hit by almost $5 million. And, you know, if God forbid you have to cut him after the 2016 season, you would probably need to designate him as a post-June 1st cap casualty, and that way you're not having to eat the nearly $5 million in dead money that would be out there because of you turning a large portion of his 2016 base salary into a signing bonus all in one season. So, I mean, is that something that sounds feasible? Are those amounts in line?
Yeah, no, I think that's dead on, Dave. And I thought, you know, when I first thought about extensions, the first thing that came to mind was similar to the Heath Miller situation. So, and you brought that up, and I think that's perfect. I think Timmons would take it, knowing his comments. You know, I'll read the quick quote that you have in the article today up on Steelers Depot. You know, he says, "I hope so. I love it here, talking about a contract extension. I can't see myself being anywhere else." So I think, you know, he's not going to be too picky if the money is relatively pretty good. Of course, with any extension, you get a signing bonus. You get that money right away. It's guaranteed. Players love that. It's that extra security. So there's no downside to that. It's not necessarily a pay cut because it isn't. I think that's a good deal for all sides around.
Yeah, and one would think if he does take that, if he's willing to take something similar to that, we might see that actually happen. March maybe, you know, depending on how quickly they need to clear up some cap space. So, you know, that's still several months off, I know. But I would be surprised if it doesn't get done, and if it doesn't get done in a similar fashion with what I just stated.
Yeah, I think you can almost guarantee, because, I mean, you're right, that cap hit is just too high for almost any player, especially one, you know, who isn't at that elite level like Timmons. So I think you can almost guarantee that there will be a contract extension. It's just a matter of the numbers, but I think the you know, projection that you posed is pretty spot on.
All right, moving on. Todd Haley and Keith Butler both talked to the media, I believe, on Thursday per their normal. And Matthew Marksi wrote a little bit about what Todd Haley had to say about Marcus Wheaton. You want to kind of summarize that?
Yeah, you know, I just think Wheaton's one of those interesting players. He's been tough for me to figure out this year. And Haley basically just said, because we all know Wheaton isn't getting involved in the offense, he's having such a down year compared to what we thought he would do, just said, you know, this is going to basically define who he is, and talk about mental toughness, because every receiver wants the ball, every receiver wants to be involved, and in the Steelers offense, it just isn't possible. So, you know, can you stay mentally, you know, in it, so whenever your number does get called, you can respond? I'll read the quote here that Todd Haley said about Marcus Wheaton. Said, I think to me it'll define what it's going to be, because everybody can't handle it. You've got one of the best in the league that you need to be targeting a bunch that makes a lot of plays. Talking about, of course, Antonio Brown. So I think it's tough out there for Wheaton, because he's not having the season he wants to, you know, despite I still think showing relatively good tape. So just, you know, being able to stay out there mentally while you're not getting the ball, you know, be not taking plays off and just assuming that you're going to get the ball in every play, even though you know that's not even going to come close to happening.
I mean, he's obviously going to be on this team in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still like him. I think he's showing some good tape. I mean, he was, you know, being a big play guy earlier in the year. I think he's doing a better job after the catch. I think he's doing a better job, you know, winning within his route and doing some of the little things in his route running. I think he's a tough run blocker. He's not necessarily a good one, but he works hard. He tries. He'll go ahead and stalk corners or try to crack a safety. He works his butt off, and I think it has to be very frustrating, because you see a guy that's clearly working hard and clearly trying, and it isn't translating into production. And I'm sure that's frustrating the heck out of him and probably Haley a little bit. There's a lot of factors that go into it when you have AB, when you have Martavis Bryant, the quarterback issues. I still can't figure out why his numbers are that low, though, because they still shouldn't be that, you know, abysmal, even with the quarterback situation. So I'm sure it's a very, very frustrating situation.
And he's the type of guy, too, that you root for.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been a model – a model citizen, and, you know, you go back and, you know, he had a lot of, I'm trying to remember back when I scouted him prior to that draft, and immediately after he was drafted, seemed like he had a lot of explosive plays at Oregon State, right?
He did. No, you're dead on.
And he's just something that he hasn't been able to do at the NFL level, and even though he's not the best route runner, let me put it to you this way. Not as good of a route runner as Emmanuel Sanders was when he came out of college, but not that much more worse, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I'm trying to think back about how I viewed those players coming out of college. I don't remember, you know, with perfect memory. Yeah, that's probably fair, though. They're not too dissimilar.
And obviously, though, if Wheaton is back in 2016, there's no reason to think that he won't be. Where does he fit in on this depth chart?
That's a million-dollar question. You know, with Sammy Coates, they're nipping at his heels. You wonder where his development will be. You wonder if Coates can be a guy that can create splash plays more consistently. It'll be a really good battle. You know, I don't know how open the competition will be, because it'll still be Coates in his second year. Obviously, that's a relatively big step forward for receivers, but you're still going against Wheaton, a guy that would be a lot more established. It frustrates, you know, I use that word a lot. It frustrates him. It frustrates me, because I think Wheaton's still a good talent. I mean, it's not like I'm seeing a lot of bad tape. It's not like he's dropping a ton of passes. There has been some occasional miscommunication between, you know, Ben and Wheaton. But I think overall, you know, if you look at the tape, he's taken some steps forward. It just is not translating to production at all, and he's basically having the worst year statistically since, outside of his injury, you know, filled rookie year, basically since his freshman year at Oregon State. And that is not an easy battle mentally to fight, and that's why I think Haley said what he did.
Well, while we're talking about wide receivers, why don't you kind of refresh our memory and tease us a little bit about Eli Rogers?
I heard you mention him with David, and I mean, you're already on that Eli Rogers train. You're the conductor on that one. You know, I'm happy that he's been out of his boot for a while now with this foot injury that he suffered in training camp. You know, he occasionally would post stuff on Instagram, things like that, and he's been, you know, running and cutting and all that good stuff. But the thing with Eli Rogers is, I mean, you know, I was a little excited with him, you know, coming out of Louisville. Whenever I watched him, he got some good spring reports and looked good early in training camp. But the guy still never played in a preseason game. He has not even been able to make it to that stage. So you still basically have no idea what you're going to get from Eli Rogers. I mean, I will have some excitement about him. I will probably write some sort of feel-good piece, you know, shortly before camp, you know, next year. But I want to see this guy in a game before I really start, you know, thinking this guy could make some sort of impact.
And obviously, too, maybe if he can add, you know, essentially being as how 2016 would be his rookie season, maybe he can provide something as far as a return guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he did some return work at Louisville. I think it might have been more on punts. I'd have to go back and look. But, I mean, it's still so far away for me to think about that stuff. I mean, he'll be competing with, you know, Wheaton and Coates, who's in his second year, that's been able to play with the team for the whole year, practice every day. I mean, just from a rep standpoint, I mean, Coates will be so far ahead of Eli Rogers. It will be tough for Rogers to be able to carve out a spot. But there is talent there, you know, a shifty slot guy. That you know, had some pretty good production at Louisville. You know, not spectacular, but it was a pro-style offense. So he'll be a guy to watch out for, but, I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead because this guy's never taken a rep in a game.
Let's talk about something that's going to happen in a few days, and that's the Steelers playing the Seahawks on the road. Where do you want to start on offense? David and I have already hit on it a little bit here, but, you know, I know you and John have both of your scouting reports up for the Seahawks in the Steelers film room sessions that you guys do on both the offense and defense. You know, what are you looking for out of the Seahawks offense this week?
You know, it's weird. Their running game, I think it's just okay, but statistically their numbers pop. I mean, you know, Thomas Rawls is averaging 6 yards a carry. As a team, they're averaging 4.8. They've gotten some big runs. I think they have 38 runs of 10 or more yards, which I think is second in the league or some number that's up there. But, you know, they're a predominant inside zone team. You know, I don't think that's what they're best at. I think they're better as a gap power team, which you will get a little bit guards pulling and, you know, some power schemes and stuff like that. I think where they really struggle is just being able to get a good push on the front side of those inside zone blocks, you know, getting a good strong double team at the point of attack. And then backside, they don't give their backside linemen a lot of help. So they're asked to make some difficult reach blocks and trying to cross, you know, an inside shaded defender's face, and they have trouble just making that block. That's a very, very tough block to make. So I think if the Steelers penetrate, if they don't play head up, if they play, let's say, you know, the defensive ends play inside shade on the offensive tackles, or if there's a tight end there, you play inside shade on him, I think you'll be able to get in the backfield and get some penetration and blow some of those plays up on their zone concepts. I think, you know, just expanding a little bit more, I think one thing that Seattle does really well is they do a lot of false keys. In the run game, they might have their fullback go the opposite way, the way their run is going. In the pass game, they'll pull their guard a lot, and they're not package plays. They're straight passes, but they'll pull their guard to give the illusion of run and try to suck you up if you're a linebacker trying to read their keys. You see the guard pull, you're going to go that way. You're thinking run, and it ends up being pass. So I think, you know, the Steelers linebackers are going to have to be extremely disciplined in reading their keys and understanding tendencies and things like that to be successful on Sunday.
Do you think they'll play into the Steelers' hands as far as personnel packages with going large on offense, enabling Steve McClendon, you know, for the Steelers to be able to run their base on early downs? Or are you expecting more 11 with, you know, sometimes Jimmy Graham attached and probably most of the time detached from the line of scrimmage?
I would I think one thing they do that's a little unique and a little tough to match up against is they do have a good bit of 12 personnel, so one running back, two tight ends with Jimmy Graham and Luke Wilson, but they'll go 3-by-1 and they'll spread you out of 12 personnel, which keeps you in base, so now you're trying to defend the whole field in your base defense, which is a little bit tougher. They'll do things similar to Cleveland, where they'll put, you know, 3-by-1 set with Graham on the backside by himself to try to isolate him one-on-one. I would expect Will Allen on Jimmy Graham again, especially out of base, because you're not in nickel. You can't do some of the things that you could do out of nickel, because if you're in your base defense, and remember last game, Cleveland got the touchdown on Will Allen with Gary Barnidge. So I think you're going to see similar things to that. I'm sure Seattle saw that on their tape watching Pittsburgh. So I think you're going to see some 12 personnel, but some spread 12 personnel to see how the Steelers match up in their base defense.
Now, the Steelers handled Jimmy Graham well last year when the two teams met. Of course, he was with the Saints. However, in spending a lot of time in trying to shut down Jimmy Graham, they allowed themselves to get over, beat over the top quite a bit. I think, what was it, Kenny Stills had one of those, didn't he, against Ike?
One or two, yeah. Tomlin said it in his presser. Stills had a big, big game.
You know, when you look at guys, Lockett, you know, we keep going back to Lockett quite a bit. He's a guy, he really could be an X factor in this. Doug Baldwin, we'll see how slowed he is by that ankle. And, you know, we already talked at the top of the show about Paul Richardson. We'll see if he's able to go. You know, you would think that in the passing game, they're going to try to get the ball to either what, Lockett or Jimmy Graham. Most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, Baldwin's been their leading receiver. Graham's been up there too. They haven't really had an established one, guy. I mean, they're not a super creative offense. You're not going to get a lot of, pre-snap motion and shifts and stuff like that. I was talking to one guy, Dan Hatman of the Scouting Academy, very, very smart guy. We were talking to Steelers Seahawks and he said it first, and I saw it on tape. If they go 3-by-1, you could almost guarantee it's going to be a pass. So they're fairly predictable. It's kind of Pete Carroll's mantra. He doesn't like to overcomplicate things. He just wants it to be simple and effective and to be able to play fast and efficient. So they're not a super creative offense compared to some of the ones I've seen, Cincinnati, even Cleveland. But, they want to be just simple and efficient. And try to be able to beat you with their best. The problem is they don't have a best receiver. They're not utilizing Jimmy Graham a whole lot or in the way that the New Orleans Saints did. So that's the reason why they're struggling on offense.
Do you expect them to just try to pressure and collapse the pocket around Russell Wilson in an effort just to make sure he's not able to make plays outside of the pocket, take their chances with him as a drop back passer? Or do you think we'll see some blitzing in here and try to get him up the middle that way?
Well, I mean, this will be the PC answer, but, there's always going to be a mix just because you don't want to give a guy like Wilson, a smart quarterback, the same look all the time because he'll figure you out. But I wouldn't expect a heavy pass rush from the outside linebackers. I think it's going to be more about contain and not letting him escape the pocket and hope your inside guys, Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, can win and collapse the interior. Because if you can collapse the interior and have a contain rush, now there's nowhere for Russell Wilson to go. And I think, the guard play for the Seahawks isn't that great. I think J.R. Sweezy is a below-average pass protector. Just overall, their interior line is not that great. They made a switch at center, putting Patrick Lewis in, which did give them an upgrade, but it was an admission that their offensive line was not playing well. Wilson's been sacked, I think, 36 times or 37 times this year. Some of that self-inflicted with him running around like he does. That offensive line isn't great, but I think overall you just want to contain rush from the outside, like you said, and then get that interior push and try just to squeeze Russell Wilson.
Where do you have you've heard David and I talk about this several times with Wilson. Is he at his ceiling?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting take that David Todd had, that he was a little down on him because he thinks he's maxed out mentally and he has nowhere to go. I don't fully get on board with that. I don't always watch some of these other quarterbacks like other people do, just because I think if you really want to watch a quarterback, you really need to watch a quarterback, like really sit down and watch, not just watch on games sometimes. So I don't have the greatest opinion of him. I think of him a little bit higher than David Todd does. But yeah, I don't know where exactly his ceiling is at. I don't know how much better he's going to get. I think he'll always be a really good quarterback and a threat, but you just worry if he ever suffers some sort of, you know, injury down the line to his legs and he loses that mobility, what kind of quarterback is he going to end up being? So basically just my question is for Wilson, what is his shelf life? I mean, obviously he's not going to be Brady, he's not going to be Manning. How long can he play? Can he play till he's 33, or is he going to start flaming out when he's 29, 30 years old?
We fully expect him to leave that pocket and use his legs a couple times in this game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just no matter how much you try to say we got to contain this guy, it's going to happen. And that's such a stress on the defense when you have to cover for 6 to 7 seconds. If you're playing man coverage, if it's third and long, the Steelers play a lot of man coverage, you know, that too high shell with the cornerbacks trailing underneath, you're going to lose vision on Wilson. And so by the time you realize he's taken off, I mean, he might already be 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, and then you're trying to rally and bring the guy down. So it is very tough. That's how they, you know, they even though they have a fairly weak passing offense on paper in the names, they've gotten some big plays. I forget the exact number, but they have some of the most 20-yard pass plays in the NFL this year. I think a lot of that is because some of the speed they have, but just Wilson extending the play and keeping the play alive. And so that's just a unique challenge. The Steelers have faced some of that before, but you know they've seen it in Kaepernick, they've seen it in Manziel, but neither of those guys even come close to the talent that Russell Wilson is.
Yeah, and you wonder, it'd be interesting to know how many of those explosive passing plays have come with Wilson delivering the ball after 5 seconds.
Yeah,
from the snap.
I would love to know that too. For whatever it's worth, Keith Butler in that little, you know, media meeting said that 25% of Wilson's completions have come outside of the pocket. So take that for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, his MO is to try to get on the move, mm-hmm. For sure, and that's going to be one of the biggest parts. I mean, look, Thomas Rawls is no slouch for sure. I mean, I like his running style. I mean, if there was anybody that probably closely emulates a guy like Marshawn Lynch, mm-hmm. it's their own guy in Thomas Rawls. He really likes taking on contact at the second level. Not as shifty. I mean, let's face it, for a guy that's bow-legged and as big as Marshawn Lynch is, he's got incredibly nimble feet, mm-hmm. In my opinion. Now, Rawls, and, you know, although you did post a Vine this past week of Rawls breaking Navarro Bowman's ankles, right?
Yeah, and that is a good linebacker to break, too, yeah.
As always, stop the run, try to get them in second and long and third and long situations and take a chance. I don't know about you, even though, you know, their wide receivers, you know, really don't scare you on paper, I'm a bit worried.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always worried. That's kind of, I guess, the natural state that I sit in the NFL, just knowing that any team can lose all the time. With Rawls, just got to get hats to him. I mean, he's a tough guy to bring down. He does not go out of bounds. He will try to run you over as opposed to going out of bounds. He's still a rookie that thinks he can do that for 10 years and not feel it. So he's still in that kind of mindset. So you better get hats to him, because a lot of the rushing yards that they've created is just after contact. I would love to know the stat of yards after contact they've had between Lynch and Rawls. I'm sure it's pretty high, because that offense line isn't great, but those guys just keep chugging along.
And this isn't a Steelers defense that's been known for consistent tackling on a week-in, a week-out basis as well.
Yeah, throw a dartboard, and that'll tell you how good the Steelers tackling is, because you just never know each week.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, we'll know immediately after the game almost is the hidden yardage that we talk about, the yards after contact, the yards after catch. You know, I really think the Steelers are going to have to do a good job at this. I mean, let's face it, they're not going to shut out the Seahawks offense in this game. In fact, I think if you can hold them under, what would you say, 20, 21, 22 points, you've done a good job.
Yeah, and what's Butler's magic number, 17, I think it is.
Yeah.
So that would be the goal.
Yeah, good luck with that. it really would be an accomplishment if they were able to. And look, if you look at look at the Seahawks schedule this year of what the games they played, what we would probably consider decent or above decent defenses, they scored, 31 points against the Rams. They scored 24 points against the Bengals. They scored 23 points against the Panthers. And the Cardinals, just a few weeks ago, they put up 32. So, I mean, the Steelers might have to win this one in a shootout, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough to predict how things go. But, I mean, you know, the Seahawks offense, they can put up points. There's no doubt about it. Wilson's efficient. Ability to keep the play alive. They run the ball well. They got some speed. They got a couple weapons. Sure, they can be potent.
Let's flip over to the other side of the ball, talking about the Steelers offense going up against the Seahawks defense. We already talked about them likely going to be without Bruce Irvin, but really when you look at what Michael Bennett and what the Averill on the other side there, look, they tried to get their pressure with four men. Yep. Plain and simple. I mean, that sticks out on tape. Very rarely, they're not a team that's really active blitzing. You don't see a guy like Bobby Wagner coming from the inside very often. They just try to line up with their four and try to get home with their four, and in doing so, they hope their back end with the extra guy back there, can get the job done. And they usually generally only play single high too, right?
Yeah. I mean, anytime you can rush four and drop seven and still get pressure, I mean, you're going to win as a defense. Now, the pressure hasn't always been there. It's only 25 sacks this year. 4.5 of those come from Bruce Irvin, who might not play on Sunday. But I think, what's impressive about them is that they have some great individual talent. I love Michael Bennett. John had some great, gifts of Cliff Averill winning the edge. They just move guys around a lot. You'll see Bennett each side, interior. Averill will move around a little bit. There's a nice rotation of guys, which a lot of, four down fronts are going to have a heavy rotation to keep guys fresh. Cincinnati does the same thing. They have some guys like Frank Clark, a rookie, who's done some nice things. Brandon Mebane's a tough guy to move in the middle. Jordan Hill, Athiah Rubin, who Steeler fans should be familiar with in his time with Cleveland. So it is a nice defensive line. Secondary, I posted in the scouting report that just went up a little bit ago. Dave, that they are a cover three base and they do a lot of pattern reading. And we've talked about that a lot. We've done a lot of breakdowns on pattern reading and stuff, but I have a link in there, which I really encourage you to check out, because there's a guy, James Light, who follows Seattle a lot closer than I do and has broken down their coverages before, and does a great job of illustrating some of the coverages that they play, some of the pattern reading that you get. It's called Mabel or Skate coverage. That helps them match against a four vertical threat out of their cover three look, out of their single high shell. So I encourage you to check that out. They'll play that a lot in 3-by-1. So they do want to play single high. They'll have a guy like Cam Chancellor play in the box to stop the run.
And we expect him to, Richard Sherman normally likes to stay on that left side. It doesn't mean that he won't follow a guy like Antonio Brown around in this game. We would be surprised if he followed him every snap around the game, but we're going to see a lot of Sherman on AB. But as Todd Haley kind of pointed out yesterday, they're going to work hard at moving AB around.
Yeah, that's a must. And I mean, I think I read a comment from Ben today that said he really expected Sherman to be on AB most of the time. Now, you never know how a game plan will be, so I don't know, Dave. You might see Sherman on AB even more than you think. That'll be a great matchup to watch, of course. They have three of the four pieces in the secondary are really good. Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas. They're still trying to figure out the other corner spot. They had Kerry Williams, who got benched late last week. Not sure if he's going to start this week or not, what the MO is. The one stat that kind of strikes me with the Seattle defense, they only have four interceptions this year. Three are by Earl Thomas, one by Chancellor, none from the cornerbacks. They had eight interceptions by their cornerbacks last year, so not getting the best production out of that secondary that, even though still looks pretty good on paper, isn't playing like it should in terms of translating into big splash plays. So I'm not sure why that is, but that's obviously good news for the Steelers.
Yeah, and I wrote about that. I referenced that twice in two articles this past week that really jumped out when you look at their takeaways this year. They have, what, eight fumble recoveries and four interceptions. And as you said, all four of those interceptions have come from their safeties, none from the cornerbacks there. I think you hit on a big spot there, a big thing there. It's who's going to play opposite Richard Sherman in this game. And you listen to Pete Carroll talk early on in the week talking about Kerry Williams and how he benched him. Who's going to be on that other side? Is it going to be Deshaun Sheed? You would think that's the way they're leaning. So that that would mean that we could see depending on where they line up, we could see some Martavis Bryant on Deshaun Sheed, and that might end up being one of the key matchups in this game. However, you know, Ben said the other day, Wednesday, that, yeah, you know, he's not going to shy away from Richard Sherman. What would we expect Ben to say? I think you have, and Ben pointed this out, you have to know where Richard Sherman is at all times, and I don't think you just purposefully go at him all game, you know, 20 targets to Antonio Brown just because you think your guy is the better player here in this situation. So I think they're really going to have to spread the ball around. I think guys like Marcus Wheaton and Martavis Bryant are really going to have to come up with big catches in this game.
Yeah, the one last thing I'll say about the secondaries, whenever they get into that, you know, Mabel, you know, skate coverage where they're pattern matching to the trip side, the backside is always man-to-man. It's called meg coverage, man everywhere he goes. So I would look to that. If there's no overhang defender, if there's no one dropping into that area, I would look backside and just try to win one-on-one with whatever corner that is, especially if that corner ends up being Kerry Williams or Sheed or Lane or Burley or whoever it ends up being. Attack that backside in 3-by-1 and just try to go man-to-man.
You think we see a lot of screens and a lot of wide receiver screens in this early on?
Honestly, I mean, none more than usual, because I like their corners. Sherman's physical. I think, you know, from what I saw from Kerry Williams, I know he got benched, but I think Williams has been a physical corner who supported the run well and will get his nose dirty. The corners that will play up and play a little bit more press than a lot of teams, so I think it's harder to play, you know, throw screens and throw the quick game against corners that roll up often. So, no, I don't think you'll see, you know, from a receiver bubble standpoint, maybe some running back screens you'll get in, but from a receiver standpoint, you might even see less than usual.
And when you talk about some of those running back screens there, I mean, Bobby Wagner's no slouch.
I love their linebackers. KJ Wright, Wagner are some of the best at it. Wright does not come off the field 98% of the snaps in every down, every situation guy. Those guys just have great vision of the ball. They float on the line well, they stay clean, and they get after it. So I'm a big fan of Wright and Wagner.
Can Ben make – boy, you know, in the games that Ben's played, especially after he came back from that sprained knee – man, he sure likes to take those shots down, you know, deep down the field. And A, you worry about him getting enough time to be able to do that in this game against the likes of a Cliff Averill and a Michael Bennett. And B, I mean, he's not made some great choices a few times this year when going downfield, too. Is there a fear that he might try to go too deep in this game?
Yeah, just because you might think, okay, cover three look, but then it turns into pattern matching and they carry the seams and you end up not getting the look that you kind of maybe expected or hoped for based on what you saw pre-snap. I mean, I just think in general, I mean, the Seattle's defense, it scares me because they got a good four-man pressure. You know, they play that four-down front. The Steelers don't do a great job against four-man fronts historically. I think Steelers offense could be in more trouble playing on the road. You're going to a silent count. You're getting some natural miscommunication and things like that. Long road trip, you know, all those factors kind of combined. I think Steelers offense could have some trouble against Seattle.
Yeah, I do too as well, too. And even though we're glad to see the bye week from a health standpoint, you know, you kind of worry about the communication, the false starts, the unforced kind of errors offensively with this team coming off of the bye.
Good point.
How else are you going to attack this Seattle defense?
You just got to give Bennett a clean pocket. I mean, I think Cody Wallace has done better, but, you know, you get Michael Bennett inside and some third and longs. I think Bennett's going to win because he wins against most guys, and Cody Wallace is far from the elite class that Bennett's been able to even beat this year. Seattle has a great run defense. They only allow 15 runs of 10 or more yards this year. The Steelers, I think, are seventh most in the league or something like that, so it'll be a really good matchup, you know, Steelers rush offense versus Seattle's run defense, who's able to stop the big plays or create the big plays. They're a one-gap scheme defensively. They like to get in the backfield and get penetration and blow these runs up. So I think, you know, we'll see if the Steelers can avoid those big negative plays in the run game on first and 10 that ends up putting you in third and long and letting their pass rush eat and those kinds of things. So I think winning on first down will be, and that's obvious, but I think that's a big part of it.
Staying on schedule as much as possible. Hope, you know, so we sound like a broken record with short fields. I mean, if ever there was a game where you needed some short fields, it would be this one. And, you know, the Steelers defense seemed to like to take the ball away in their own end.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? not the opposing end. So, you know, I think you got to get some three and outs at least once or twice in this game. You got to only give up maybe, you know, when you don't give three and outs, have them punt from at least maybe their own, you know, 40 or something like that. Jacoby Jones apparently is going to be the punt returner again this year. I mean, this weekend. And if there's any, we already talked, we know about this, the Seahawks special teams unit, because it mostly revolves around Lockett there. Mm-hmm. And we already talked about how, you know, maybe having Shemarco and maybe having Garvin back will help in that area. If ever there was a week that Jacoby Jones could have some success, you know, as a punt returner, it would be this week, because the Seahawks have not done a good job with that this year.
Yeah, and wouldn't you love an opening kickoff to take the crowd out of it, get a big touchdown or a big play, shut up the crowd, and put yourself in a good spot? That'd be great. Other quick note on Seattle special teams, watch the fake on field goals. Last year, the Packers ran two fakes from the field goal unit with John Ryan, their holder, who's done a lot of fakes in his career. He threw a touchdown pass in that playoff game against Green Bay. Everyone remembers that. He also had a five-yard run against the Redskins earlier that year. So watch out for John Ryan. He's a squirrely one.
Yeah, I think the couple times that you've made a point to go out of your way to point that kind of stuff out, is how, I know the Rams, it happened, mm-hmm. and what other game was it?
I don't.
Cincinnati?
Something like that.
Arizona or something like
that. Yeah, but I just put on my crystal ball, my big hat and the big, you know, whatever it is, and predict that.
There you go. All right, push comes to shove. Let's give predictions here. Give me a score prediction.
Ooh, you know I hate score predictions, but I'll do it since I'm the guest here. This, you know, Seattle's defense scares me. I think they'll cause a lot of problems, you know, and being at home is a big help, though. But I'll be a little more optimistic just knowing where the Steelers are at, because Steelers have done better on offense. They're opportunistic on defense. I say Steelers win 27-21.
Wow, this just ain't you being a homer, right?
I try to be as objective as I can, you know that.
I'm a little bit more nervous about this game, okay. Alex, and especially because it's on the road, and especially because it's coming off of the bye. I worry about some of those unforced errors that we talked about, and I'm worried about Ben maybe trying to force a ball deep one too many times, you know, in this game. I hope he doesn't serve up that first interception to their cornerbacks. I think it's a tough chore, and I've had this game circled. You know, I know Seattle really has had problems at times this year, but, you know, I've had this, I think, had this game circled as a Seahawk win ever since the schedule came out, and I'm not going to shy off from that right now. I think the Seahawks win this game 27-21 over the Steelers.
So you're just flipping my prediction.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think 6-point game. I think the Steelers come up short, and hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You know, on this for sure. Regardless what happens, we'll be wrapping it up immediately after the game on SteelersDepot.com, and all throughout the week as well too. And hope you're reading Alex's great stuff there, along with John's and the rest of the gang that does all the hard work there for us on Steelers Depot. You can follow me on Twitter @ Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter @ David M Todd. You can follow Alex Cazora @ Alex_Cazora. You can follow the show @ Terrible Podcast. Alex, I appreciate you sitting in for David, and who knows, we might release a little bit of encouraging, maybe off-season news as far as you and John are concerned here in the coming weeks here, so be prepared for that, listeners, as well, too. Alex, once again, thanks again for sitting in, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.